Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's interview is going to be with Melissa Fitzsimmons. Melissa wrote and directed one of my favorite short films. It's called That Party That One Night, and it's so good that it took home the Audience Award at Film Invasion LA in 2017. As always, you should really watch the film before you listen to this interview. So if you go to discoverfilm.net, there's a link to it on Melissa's website. I guarantee you're going to love this film. And then I guarantee you're going to really enjoy hearing about Melissa and how she got it done. I think that's enough setup.
Like everybody, I grew up going to the movies and watching movies as a kid and watching a lot of TV. I was the latchkey kid, so I kind of had to fend for myself a lot of the time after school. And I was really lucky. I grew up in a small town, and our backyard was a drive-in movie theater. And so,
You could see the screen from your backyard?
Yeah, for a while, I would just kind of crawl up on the top of the trailer, and it's when you could tune in your like AM radio to a specific channel, and you would get the movie.
I remember it.
Yeah, and so I would just kind of do that for a long time. And then when we moved, it was just a blessing that literally my neighbor was a movie theater. So my mom was a single parent, and we raised ourselves a lot when my mom worked. And so my babysitter was literally a movie theater. You could go and you could collect cans, and I would go and collect cans, and then I would go to the store and you could cash them in like at the local like gas station or Circle K. And you would get all, I would buy like penny candy, and it was a dollar to go to the movies, which is a lot when you're like 10, but totally worth it. And I would go with my pockets full of penny candy, and I would pay for the movie. And then when the movie ended, I would stand behind the curtain and just wait for it to start again, and then just watch them over and over, the same
movie. The same film. So yeah. In a way, and that is absolutely a way that you learn way more about filmmaking and films is to watch them over and over.
I mean, as a kid, I didn't know that. I just was like, this was
a
great way to
picking up on it.
I don't know. I mean, I mean, as a kid, I'm like, it was just there and it was something to do. And when, you know, it was better than sitting at home and doing nothing.
And it was just a coincidence that your mom happened to choose these homes.
Yeah, we were, you know.
She wasn't planning. She didn't say, okay, good. She can go to the movies all the time. It just worked out that
way. My mom didn't have that much train of thought when it came to stuff like that. It was literally where we could afford to live.
Right.
The thing that was great about it is like in the early 80s, like horror movies were like the thing. Like that was the trend in movies. And where I grew up in Utah, like this town, like we wouldn't get all the movies when they came out. And the movie theater only had like, you know, 75 seats or something like that. And they at the end of the month, they would get like a marathon of movies that would, you could come and you could see like all the movies that you kind of missed for the whole month. And he would air them like in one weekend. And so as a kid, that was like the best thing ever. Completely inappropriate for like an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old to be in a movie theater watching horror movie after horror movie.
Yeah, and that was the golden age of the Friday the 13th movies and the Halloween movies.
I remember being like, I must have been like fourth grade seeing like Nightmare on Elm Street movies. They were the best. Scared the crap out of me.
Yeah, were well made. They were fun. They were fun.
Yeah.
And that's funny because for me, those movies were the ones that I was in high school by then. So it was all about putting on one of those movies in someone's house on VHS so that all the boys and girls would grab each other when it was scary.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went through a few birthday parties that had that too.
Yeah.
I think my love of horror movies and anything I would have learned about horror movies comes from 80s horror movies and being a kid and sneaking into the movie theater and just kind of hiding behind the curtain until the next one started. So I guess maybe I did learn something about movies. Yeah, but I didn't really learn. I had no idea that filmmaking was a thing, because for me, movies were real as a kid. So it wasn't, it really wasn't until high school that I even thought, oh, this is like a job that people get paid for. Like, you can do this. And, you know, being in high school still, I didn't think it was a job. Like, I didn't know any movies that were directed by women. I only thought the way you could be in a movie was to be in it, to be an actor. So for like a brief time, I was like, well, I'm just going to be an actress. And I was pretty terrible. I did like all the local theater stuff and high school theater, and but they always were musicals, and I know I don't sing and dance well at all. I don't even pretend to do any of that well. And I had a teacher in high school who taught like a film is literature class, which was like, hey, read these books and then let's watch the movies that they're based on. And I took that class and it was really fascinating to me. And he just happened to be a teacher that made documentary films. And he actually said, you know what, your sensibilities are better behind the camera. And he really mentored me a lot, and he really took me under his wing, and he taught me about just like all the different types of films, like, and just directors and filmmaking. And he gave me my first camera when I was a junior in high school, and he started a film program at the school, and there was like a really small group of us. And I just started making like mini documentary films with like my skateboarding friends and stuff like that. And that's just how it started.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And actually, if it's funny, it just pops off the top of my head that I know, like, that's how Spike Jonze got started, was skateboarding videos.
And BMX. Yeah. BMX spikes. Yeah. Sure did. I didn't know about Spike Jonze until I was
But it's just kind of, it's something that a lot of people don't realize, is that all these other things are great training and great, great ways to start learning about the craft.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you're together with your friends and goofing around, that's learning about anything.
So high school sounds, that's really great. What a great story about an inspiring teacher.
Yeah, he's great. We're still friends. I'm honored that he was not only a great English teacher, and I'm a huge book nerd, so that was really wonderful. But he introduced me to filmmaking, and he's always been somebody that I can, you know, write an email to and go, what do you think about this? And he still answers. So I'm happy that we're, as adults, I consider him a friend, but still always a teacher first.
Right, and a mentor. So, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And so then after high school, how did you take it? Did you not pursue it for a while?
Well, I have been photographing since I was a kid, taking photos since I was a kid.
Right. So photography was an interest.
So photography was naturally what I did that was easier for me to do. So in high school, I used to photograph bands that would come through town and play at the local armory. And I was really heavily involved in like the punk music scene, and the bands would come through and I would photograph them and then just kind of sell the photographs to like friends at school or sell them back to the band. And I would get that money, buy Super 8 film, make skateboard documentaries or skateboard videos with the money in the film. And then I would just kind of really started taking photography seriously because people were more willing to give me money for that versus like shooting Super 8 videos of them, I guess. And then, so right after high school, I actually parlayed right into photographing. So I was a tour photographer for many years. I had done a few like short documentaries and short film in high school, but at that time, just things were so different than they are now. And I grew up in a small town, and there just wasn't a knowledge of like film festivals and stuff like that, at least for me. So,
yeah, doing photography and touring and doing that kind of thing with bands is way more accessible, than you know, shooting film. And back then, yeah, before the digital revolution, shooting small films was really tough.
Yeah, I mean, I had a VHS camcorder, so that's what we shot a lot of things on.
And it was huge, right?
Yeah. And it was fun, though. I somewhere in my early 20s is when I started to parlay more into documentary films. I started, instead of just photographing bands, I started filming them and then kind of splicing together these little, like, Super 16 short documentaries about music scenes. I moved to Seattle, and it was, like, the perfect time to be living in Seattle and photographing that whole scene and filming that whole scene and meeting all those people, and it was, like,
yeah, I couldn't have asked for a better. So you were there before Seattle exploded?
I lived there in 92, 93. Yeah, so it was perfect timing. I was lucky. I was very lucky to have hit that scene at the right time. And so that's how I really got started. I transitioned from photography into documentaries. And then those documentaries all the way through my 20s, basically, with some detours here and there, just like everybody else. And just in the last, I would say, 5 or 6 years, I've transitioned over into narrative filmmaking. So that's where I am today, right now. In bed, sick, writing.
And that was just sort of a natural thing. You sort of reached a point with the documentary tour and band and the music scene thing, and it just sort of evolved. Did you always have stories on your mind? Were you always...
I think in high school. Recently, I found a notebook from high school where I had written a bunch of short films, and they are hilariously and bad, but I still want to make them just because they're...
I think you mentioned that in the Q&A.
So bad, yes. But I think the reason why I switched into narrative is I actually had kids. And when you have a kid, it's hard to be on the road touring with bands or making a documentary like your... Oh, the type of documentaries I made were the kind where you kind of embed yourself really with a community. And you're away a lot. And you're living on the road and you're traveling and you can't do that with a kid. So bless my little kids.
You had to create a home.
Yeah. And so I took a break. I took a break from all things film. I got like a real job. And then I worked at a studio for 6 years in an animation studio, and that was interesting. And I learned so much about how a studio makes movies and so much information that is stored in my brain if I ever come to the point where I ever make a studio movie someday. And then I had a second kid, and I owned an art gallery for 5 years. And so I tried to stay in creative fields that allowed me to still be creative and use some sort of other skill that I might have, you know.
You know what? Can I ask you to tell me about the art gallery? Because that's been like my secret wish for like 20, 30 years would be to have an art gallery. How did that happen? Or so were you just interested?
Well, I've always been interested in art. And I'm married to an artist, so it's part of our life. And I had worked at this animation studio, and I had worked in the visual development department there. And there were all these amazing, just absolutely mind-blowing artists who had so much talent, and yet their job was to, like, draw talking animals for cartoons. And it just blew my mind that they would go to art school and had so much to say and do, and yet it was just talking animals. So when I had my second kid and I had thought, well, do I want to go back to working in this field? It's not really what I want to do, and it's kind of just a job. I do enjoy it, and I do enjoy the people I work with. I had thought, you know, maybe I'll try a different path, and that's where the art gallery came from. It was something I was interested in. I was very lucky there happened to be a space, like, 3 blocks from where I lived. I had 2 kids at home that were really young, and I wanted something that I could still be involved with artistically and still have my kids involved. And so it dawned on me when an artist friend from work was having dinner with me, and he said, oh, I just wish I could show everybody else my work that I actually do, that I actually paint and do all this stuff. And so to me, I was like, That's interesting to me. Like, there's all these people that they have no idea what these guys can really, really do. And so it just kind of percolated for a while. And I was like, well, here's an opportunity. Maybe I'll try this and see how it works. I got into it very foolishly. So, but I was very fortunate. I had 5 really good years, and I did what I wanted to do with it. And I got to only have shows with people who had never had shows before. This was like their first time ever having an art show. And I met some amazing artists, and I have some amazing art at my house. And it was just truly a DIY space. And then there were 6 other galleries on the same block as me. And we had some great parties and we had some great fun. And then all of a sudden, all these galleries started closing and this bubble just burst. And I was like, I'm not in debt. I don't owe anything. My lease is about ready to be to go away. Should I keep continuing this, even though right now no one's really buying any art anymore? And so I got out ahead. And I've maintained some really great friendships, and I'm able to guest curate at other places now just based on having a really good reputation with artists that I really respect that I was able to do. And so
yeah, that's I'm happy fantastic. About it. That's very cool. So then as the art gallery was wrapping up, is that when you started to think about where you would apply your creative juices?
Yeah. There was some talk about me going back to work at a studio or an office job or back in production. And my husband actually was the one that said, you know, the kids are a little bit older now. They'll be starting school in a couple of years. Why don't you go back to actually what you want to do instead of denying yourself? And he said, why don't you go back to do documentary films? And I had a documentary partner, and I got back in touch with him, and we discussed a few projects that he was currently working on, and I kind of helped out a little bit with those. And then I said, you know what? I don't really want to do documentaries. I want to do filmmaking. I want to give this a go. And so I wrote a few shorts, and I just had watched a bunch of friends and how they had did it and how they had gone about it. And I thought, now's a really perfect time. There's all these great new ways to make films for so affordable that I could just make just a test it out, see if I'm even really interested in doing narrative and figure out what works for me and what doesn't. And I had just been out of the game for so long that the only way to do it was literally almost everything by myself. And so I had to learn like how to even use a digital camera. I hadn't done it, not even with my photography. I'd never used a still camera. I just had used film camera. And so
yeah, right, loaded with film though, not digital. So the whole digital thing is new.
Yeah, the whole digital thing was me. I didn't jump on the digital bandwagon when it first started happening with photography, and it was a big regret I have. Like, I probably could have went back to being a photographer had I just. Now I'm like, oh, it's not that hard. So, but at the time, it was very daunting to me.
Yeah, and the equipment was really expensive.
Yeah, it was so expensive. And I was like, I am a freelance photographer. I can barely afford film. How am I supposed to afford this? Like, cameras were like, you know, 10 grand. And I'm like, what? So, but now you can get them for a couple $100 and you're fine.
I know. But, now they have them at Costco.
Yeah, everything is. But, you know, I regret that decision. And so that's why when I had the opportunity to go and do film, I was like, I'm going to not shuck the old, like, what everyone's doing now. I think there's room for both. I could shoot a movie on film, or I could shoot it digitally, and I can still be happy with it. So
that's have you done both since you returned to it?
I have, yeah. I have. And, you know, and I'm still, and I'm doing both documentary and narrative, so I feel like I'm in a comfortable place right now.
Yeah, you're a well-rounded artist.
Well, I don't know about that. But.
Well, that's just my opinion.
But I'm always up for a good challenge.
And documentary, are you? We're talking features and things. Or
yeah, I mean, I've shied away from features just because they take so long, and I'm really, the ones that I'm working on right now are more series for, or shorts. It takes, it's a little less time away from home. So, and I'm a little bit more picky about the projects I choose, and I'm really trying to make sure that the, what I'm trying to say is, and what I want to put out there is a little bit more, you know, personal for me. So,
yeah. Well, I know
nothing wrong with a good old sports doc. Believe you, I'm all about the underdog.
Oh, and very cool.
I love a good sports doc, but I just can't do anymore.
Well, the work I know you for, that party that one night.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I know that's a personal story.
It is, yes.
And but now, even more so, I understand why it looks the way it does and is so accomplished. And really just kind of beautiful is because with your photography background, you know, that's why your lighting is better than most people and your framing is better. I mean, it's.
Well, thank you.
You you do stand. The films we show at these festivals, you know, are the best of the best of what, you know, you don't see all the stuff that gets submitted that we don't show.
You know? Oh, I've seen some.
You've seen some of it. So, I mean, you know, when something like your film comes along, it's just so, so, you know, it's just wonderful to see.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I can't take all the credit. Pedro Avila is an excellent cinematographer. And he knew, we had a long conversation about, like, what I needed the film to look like and be. And a lot of it was drawn on my documentary experience, and a lot of it is drawn on, you know, that time that I needed it to feel like. And so,
yeah. Well, but choosing the right people, you get to take credit for choosing the right people too.
I'll take full credit for them.
Well, what was the process to get that one? I mean, are you just, are you in this great position where you're, always working on your own material?
Well, to some, it may seem like I'm in a great position. I'm only in this position because no one else is giving me material to work on.
Right.
So it's like you can be one of those people that talks about, I'm going to make a movie, I'm going to make a movie, I'm going to make a movie. Or you could be the person that says, well, fuck it, I'm going to make a movie and I'm just going to do mine, which is the position I'm in, which is like I could wait for somebody to give me money or I could wait for somebody to give me a script that is really amazing. But I'm not getting either of those. So I have to go, well, I guess I'll write my own thing of a story that I'm interested in and hope people are interested in seeing it. And then figure out how I'm going to find that money by borrowing and dealing as well as I can. I think one of the things I'm known for, and I really chalk this up to being, you know, my Generation X, is that I'm a pretty good hustler. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all, because I think there's a real art to a hustle. And it's not screwing people over. It's definitely like, I'm going to work with you and you're going to work with me and we are DIY and that's our mentality.
Right. It's a make things happen attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm Gen X too, and we were in between those huge baby boom bubbles where we had to scrap.
Yeah, it's all DIY. And you know, I also, like, from growing up in a skateboarder culture, you just, like, you do what you need to do and to make it work. And you find those people who have that same mentality. And that's just where I am with filmmaking. I'm very fortunate that I have found a very small group of people. Like, we would all love to get paid. I would love to get paid. I would love to be able to go have somebody give me more money so I can go make a bigger project and really show people what I can do. But I can't wait around for that. So I'm just going to do what I'm going to do anyway. So hopefully somewhere along the way, someone goes, man, I really like what she does. I really want to work with her. I got this money. I'm going to give it to her.
But that would be great.
Well, that's what all filmmakers
and as I recall, well, and well, actually, let me ask before I get to asking you about what's next. So that party that one night, I mean, I know it's an autobiographical story, mm-hmm. but like when you wrote it, were you just like, okay, this one I have to make?
It was a that one was the weird one because I had how it came about because I had actually wrote a feature for it, and that was a part of the feature that I cut. But I had always really liked that kind of side story, and I was like, I'm going to save this for someday. I don't know what it, when that day will come, but I kind of really like this little tidbit that didn't end up in the bigger grand scheme of the film. And I had applied for a grant from the Bureau of Creative Works, and it was for like micro budget grant. And I'm like, that's all I know is micro budget. So I just, like I said, you have to figure out how to ways to make it work. And so they had given it to me, and then they were like, well, now you got to do it. And I was like, but what happened was they gave me a grant for a different film, and that film was no longer available to make into a short. And so I said to them, look, you might want to take your grant money back because I can no longer do this short film that I had submitted to you guys for the grant money. And they said, well, no, we like what you do, so just take it for your next project. But we just need that project by next month. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem.
Completed in a month?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I got an idea. And I didn't have an idea. And I, like, was in this panic of, oh, I have to write something, shoot it, and, like, put it through post in a month. And I had called my really good friend, Jeff Zinn, who was the editor on it. And he was, like, a great filmmaker peer of mine. And, like, I love his movies. And I was talking to him, and I was like, I don't think I can do a film in 3 weeks for $1,200. And he was like, no, you totally can. If anyone can do it, you can. And I'm like, I don't have an idea. And I had a few ideas. I was like, what about this? And what about this? And he was like, no, that'll cost too much money. And then he was like, well, what about that one, about your party that one night that you were in high school? And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I wrote it. And then after I wrote it in a night. And then I wrote it. And I was like, this is too big. I can't do this for this money. This is no way. And then a really good friend of mine from high school, who was like we grew up skateboarding together. He was like, oh, I'll give you a little extra money to do it. So I think he kicked in like a couple extra $1,000. So it brought the budget up. And I was like, I still can't do it. And then everyone was like, no, I'll help you. And so I was like, well, I guess I should do it. So we literally.
And they all just believed in you.
There were fools.
No, they weren't. But I mean, were they reading it too and saying, look, this, I really want to see this get made?
I don't think anyone read it actually, except
like, so it was really more belief in you than
it was
reading.
Really just me like going, guys, remember how I told you this story about me in high school and this story about me in high school? Should I do an embarrassing story of me in high school? And everyone was like, yeah, do that. And so yeah.
It's so funny. You think it's embarrassing. Your character's like heroic almost. I think she is.
She's a fool.
Nah, she's rad.
But no, they were good. I believed in them. They believed in me. And then in the end, we had a movie 3 weeks later.
So in the end, you actually did what, you know, the normal model, right, is the filmmaker struggles forever reaching out to all these possible investors, you know, and cobbling it together. And you kind of were this cool inverse of that, of people saying, no, I believe in you. Here, let me become an investor. I mean, well, on a small scale, but still, it's a pretty cool story. It's pretty cool how it came together.
I know. I hope all those people are around when I need to do a feature.
So. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, but you said that part of that one night was something you pulled out of a feature that you'd written?
Yeah, I had written a feature about like the last week of high school.
Right. Your high school movie. Yeah. You wrote.
Yeah. It was my homage to John Hughes. And, this was part of that and a part of this character and just like her, this right. kind of.
So the feature's about her too?
It's about a group of friends. Yeah.
So in a way that party that one night, I remember talking about it at the Film Invasion Q&A, like it was, like it possibly could sprout into a feature, or is it really not even an essential part of the feature? And the feature would almost be like it completely separate from it.
That party that one night was originally part of the feature. Right. And then during rewrites, it was one of those things that got, you know,
it got
redlined out because it was like, what is this? What's this scene doing? You know, you ask yourself all those. I don't know how real writers do it, but I'm still trying to figure it out. I mean, it could go back in, but I know that there was a very strong response to the short and a strong response to the characters. The characters are still in the feature. It was just that moment, which is really what a lot of my shorts are about. You know, I do it all wrong, basically, but
that's what a short should be. The best thing about shorts is a really true moment is what a short should be about.
I like to think they should be about moments. Apparently, people say they should have a beginning, middle, and end, but so.
Well, yours actually does. You even have.
I was lucky.
You have solid structure. But I mean, is this the kind of, am I crazy to think that people should be looking at your short and saying, okay, it looks great. The characters are great. The performances are great. Let's see how this, let's make this as an indie feature. I mean,
I would love that. I mean, that's part of the reason why I think filmmakers make shorts is because there is this possibility of making them into features or making a feature. Depending on who you ask and why they make short films, there's different reasons for making it. I mean, I know I had multiple reasons for making That Party That One Night. One being like, it's a proof of concept. Two being like, I have not made a coming of age film and I would like to make a coming of age film. And three, I wanted to test out a new style, a new look. Like, I want to challenge myself as a filmmaker and go, I could do this. I'm aesthetically growing. Like I'm challenging myself. So.
Yeah, you definitely prove that you can do an aesthetic. I mean, it's a better aesthetic than a lot of features.
Well, thank you. Again, cast and crew really help.
Of course. And I remember you saying like that's all practical light.
Yeah.
But you still, obviously the photography background and the right cinematographer and everything, but obviously, you know how to use practical light to make things look good because it's not like one of those little indie shorts where they turned on the lights in their apartment and shot something. You know, I mean,
no.
It looks great.
There was definitely a sense of we want to shoot in the – we're shooting at nighttime. How are we going to get lights? Like, we have to figure it out. I think we had one China ball and then, you know, we had to find the right location that had just the right amount of outdoor lighting. And that was like a process that was, you know, 12 hours of driving around somewhere going, okay, you know, in the middle of the night going, oh, well, this place looks great. How late are they open till? And maybe they can turn that light on as well. And,
right. And
then when we shot in the backyard, it was like, okay, there's light from the garage. If we turn that on, well, let's put up some Christmas light. Those little
twinkly you hung all those string lights all over.
And to me, that didn't seem out of place because that's kind of what everybody does in their backyard.
It is. It's actually a gorgeous backyard.
Yeah. I mean, it worked too. I was very lucky. I think indoors for the party scene was a bit, it was like, okay, how do we get these lights in here? How do we get some light in here? We're shooting, you know. So to me, it was like, well, I just remember going to parties in high school where there was always the flashing light or the disco ball or like the strobe light. And, you know, we couldn't have strobe because how it interacted with the red sensor. And so, but, you know, we could change all the light bulbs in the lamps and stuff like that to give them a different glow and blah, blah, blah. So we figured it out. And luckily for us, it worked.
Definitely. Yeah, and it looks great. And it's nice to see. I mean, it's nice to hear that you did have a great reception to the film.
We did. I was very happy.
And I know from your website, and I guess I think social media too, like you got an award from Film Invasion and you got plenty of others, I think.
I did. I'm just shocked anyone ever watches anything I do. So any kind of award is like, what? Okay. All right. So I'm very happy with how it went.
Awesome. And is it leading you to the next thing?
I don't know. Does that lead? I mean, I had already started the next thing while I was finishing that thing. So.
Oh, yeah, right. So you yeah. never stop.
I try not to. I mean, there's always something I try to keep going. I mean, there's lulls, but you got to keep doing it. You got to keep baby stepping it forward.
So what's next for you?
So last year, while that part of that when I was in festivals, I'm trying to become a better writer. So I really wanted to make the goal of just writing more and like trying to get in a habit and trying to do that. So I wrote a script and I've never entered a script to a contest before, but I figured like I needed to get past that barrier and I needed to get feedback from strangers. So I entered a script in a short film lab and it won. So Tita's Vodka gave me money to make it. And I just am about ready to premiere that film at Sun Valley Film Festival in 2 weeks. So
how that cool.
is, yeah.
You know, it's funny. You're so humble. And yet you keep getting things done and winning competitions and getting awards. It's very nice to hear. And you still think it's luck.
It is luck. Come on. Winning awards and getting into festivals. It's like luck, man. I mean, you never know who's going to screen your film that day or like if a programmer is going to like it. Listen. Art is subjective. Filmmaking is art. Like
it is very subjective, sure.
You're going to get somebody who watches your movie and that one person determines whether or not it's good enough.
Well, it's supposed to be a jury of people. It's supposed to, you know.
Well, but let's be honest. Like it goes to one person first and that person goes, oh, I like this. Let me pass it on to the next screener. But what if that person doesn't like horror movies and I've made a horror? So I just don't, you know, I think I love festivals. Well, not always, but let's be honest. You know, festivals are a tool in the toolbox. They're not the be all end all. They're, and I am very, probably shouldn't be talking like this to an actual festival director, but they're not going to make or break me, no matter Sundance or not. They can't. No, so
even Sundance, really, yeah. You know, people invest so much of their imaginations into if my film gets into Sundance, then XYZ will happen. And it really isn't true. Even Sundance
make or break I'm happy for anybody. Out of XYZ, I'm happy if just X happens, honestly. So I can't value myself and my work based on what others think of it. Like, this is the reason why, like, I have big debates with friends about, like, why are you reading a review from some dude on, like, Rotten Tomatoes? Like, that person's going to tell you whether or not this movie is worth seeing. Like, do you just want to see the movie or not? It's a simple question. Like, decide for yourself if it's good or not. I think, like, critical analysis of the art form of film, like, there's very few like critics who do that. And those are the people that you read, but I don't read reviews, if that makes sense. Not that anyone's reviewing my shit, but I'm talking about film in general.
Yeah. Like, deciding.
I just feel like, and that's how it is with like, you know, we're making films and we're doing it because we want to do it. And that's our passion. And that's the only thing I really know how to do is tell stories, whether it's with still pictures or moving pictures. I'm a storyteller, so I have to figure out like how to make them. And then if no one likes it, at least I told a story and I'm lucky if one person or 100 people or 1,000 people listen to the story.
It's kind of a recurring theme on this podcast that these filmmakers are really humble. I mean, of course you already watched that party that one night. And of course you already know that Melissa did such a better job at portraying high school than big budget, multi-million dollar Hollywood movies. Just like me, you'd love to hear her say, yeah, my movie totally kicks ass. But she's just not going to say it. All right, so you should have already watched that party that one night. But if you haven't,
Go to discoverfilm.net and there's a link to see it at her site. While you're at discoverfilm.net, you can watch a lot of other great shorts. There's links to some great feature films, and there's links to Film Invasion LA that's coming up in June, and the Sherman Oaks Film Festival that comes up every November. And there's nothing else to say. Thanks for listening.